This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hey everybody, welcome. We've got a new guest who is actually not really new to me. You might be new to you. Why don't you introduce yourself to everybody?
Hello, everybody. I'm Michael.
That's it. There's no more history behind Michael and I. No. Michael is the host of Video Night. I'm the co-host of Video Night. I do intermittent shows over there, and he is first time as a guest here right now.
It's weird not being in control. It's twice now in the last month that I've done that, where I've been guest on other people's show, and it's kind of nice because I don't have to do all the mechanics of stuff. And
well, I'm going to have you do some heavy lifting because I don't know a whole heck of a lot about what did we just watch?
Uh-oh, Hudson Hawk.
Bruce Willis is back in business.
Thanks for saving me, tough guy.
And business is booming.
I was afraid you weren't going to drop by.
Hudson Hawk.
That excites me.
Check, please.
The best cat burglar that ever lived.
I didn't want to do it. All I wanted was a cappuccino.
But he can't retire.
Maybe nobody told you. I quit stealing.
If he wants to keep on living.
This is a brand new tuxedo!
Watch your step. Hold your breath. Hang on for dear life. And catch the Hawk.
Good play, Junior.
Bruce Willis, Danny Aiello, Andy McDowell. Hudson Hawk.
Sounds like a party.
Is this the first time you've ever seen Hudson Hawk?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes.
Like, at no point it ever came up as just like a curiosity or just like, nope.
I have come upon the thing while it was on TV and seen a clip here or there, you know, the Leonardo da Vinci flying thing, the shooting the rocket launcher while they're singing songs. I've seen clips, I've seen moments, but I've not endured the entire thing, which itself, why it's on this show, it doesn't seem like it would be necessarily, except the thing is an anomaly, it's odd, it's weird.
Yeah, it's this massive studio movie, yet it has the ideas of like a crazy independent
movie. It seems like a comic book film before its time, but it doesn't have anything to pull from. So they make up their own mythos and all this stuff. But what is it referencing? But it all seems like it's referencing something, you know? For me, anyway.
Yeah, I was reading the article by Daniel Waters about how he was approached with the script for this. It was already kind of written out by Bruce Willis and his writing partner, and he was trying to make an action movie that was anti-Die Hard. Lighter in tone, a little more inventive in its action instead of being a straightforward, violent, bloody movie. He was like, he wanted to try to get his character from moonlighting in the action world. It feels like it was just a bunch of ideas that he wrote down on a notepad of things that he wanted to do, like 12 different movies, and just said,
oh, you know what, let's just do it as one.
Yeah, I did read that article. That's actually what put this in my head, and also that you like this movie.
I do like this movie. I'm like, this is the first time I've seen it.
Like it enough to talk about it, and I was like, well, you and I have been struggling over what movie to have you on this show about, and I was like, I've never seen it. All right, Michael, Hudson Hawk. Yes, and you're good with it, so.
We're finally on the same page. You suggest things, I'm like, no, or I'll suggest something to you, and you're like, no.
Right, so this is odd enough for this show. It didn't spin my head. I'd say it's more like, stylistically, in a way, it seems more like a young Einstein, but for adults, in its outlandishness, without going into full-on cartoon.
Yeah, I saw actually when it first came to video. I remember them promoting the crap out of it, you know, for the video game, and, you know, they had that little animated, do you remember the animated logo they showed it
on? Yeah. The video game, you just mentioned video game.
But they also did it for the movie. At the end of the TV trailer, they'd show him like a little animated Bruce Willis with a flashlight shining
right
around the logo.
Yeah.
And I don't know, something about that seemed unusual, and it caught my attention. And, you know, I'm 14 at the time, so I'm really getting into the action-adventure genre. You know, it was one of those things where I saw the bad reviews, so I didn't really push myself to go see it in the theaters. I saw it on video, and me and my sister watched it together, and she was 11 at the time. And while, yes, there was a lot of F-bombs, and there is some violence in there. There was kind of a Looney Tunes approach to it all.
Yes.
And we really got into that kind of stuff. The off-the-wall humor, the goofy behavior. That's something I've always connected to with
the movie. Yeah. Why I mentioned the video game is that there was a video game tie-in in one of the earlier movies. It's a rated R movie that has a video game tie-in. There's a line in the film about him playing Nintendo with Andy McDowell.
Anna?
Yes, that's it.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Will you play Nintendo with me?
I can't think of anybody I'd rather play Nintendo with.
And that's directly in relation to hawking the video game. I'm pretty sure about it.
Has to be.
Oh, you know, there's product tie-ins with character names. Okay, what's the story about? You boil the story down real quick.
Basically, Bruce Willis is out of prison. He is a cat burglar. He's been gone a long time, so that's why you have references to, like, what's Nintendo? And stuff like that, and how much he badly wants, what was it, a martini? A dry martini?
No, cappuccino.
No, it was a cappuccino. He just desperately wants that cappuccino, and then he'll be satisfied. So he teams up with Danny Aiello.
Danny Aiello is his old partner.
Yeah, and they're going on a new crime together, and somehow, I remember, was it Frank Stallone is involved somehow?
Yeah, Frank Stallone is one of the, here's another video game thing which is nuts. Frank Stallone is part of a team of mafiosos. They're named the Mario Brothers.
Oh, right. I'm just thinking about the sway that Nintendo had over the world at this time. I mean, they just, oh.
We're gonna make a whole movie about our games, and we're gonna call it The Wizard. We got Super Mario Brothers. Does it have anything to do with the game? Nope. But we're still greenlighting it.
I mean, that's how much pull they have. They could have had Legend of Zelda and just be about a lonely guy living in the Bronx looking for a lady named Zelda. And they totally would have greenlit that.
So the MacGuffin here is, people want him to steal three pieces of Da Vinci art because Da Vinci had hidden this crystal in three parts that would turn lead or any other metal into gold. He discovered the way alchemy actually would work, and then he was like, no, this isn't good for anybody.
Actually, you know what this feels like? This feels like a whole season of a show. 22 episodes compressed into two.
Yeah, you might be right there. The movie's full of unfunny jokes.
Like, If you say so. I don't know. I find myself laughing at it constantly.
Well, I laughed. It's like a dad joke where they're like, oh, come on. Why? Really? That's the joke? You know, the singing thing that I mentioned before.
I love that part. I love it. The whole time.
It's a theme throughout the film because instead of using a clock, he uses songs, and they're all old standards, like Wish Upon a Star.
We ain't got a barrel of money,
but maybe
money,
but we'll
sing along, singing a song, side by side.
Hey! You got your opportunity to sing here. Everybody, hey, I usually shut down this guy's singing when we're on video night. I usually just groan it off or make some offhanded comment about, oh golly. But you got it this time on my show.
I did because I chose a song that I can actually sing. I usually can't sing anything. We usually pick songs that are like heavy metal. I can't do rock singing. But I can do like crooner singing for some weird reason. Elvis, ahua, ahua. You know, that kind of stuff. But usually you are screeching in pain like, Michael, stop it!
True. That is true. Oh, wait. The bad guys. There's all kinds of bad guys here. You got the mafiosos that we just mentioned, the Mario Brothers. You have the people who are pulling the strings on everybody. But you have the CIA. What are they called in this?
I can't remember. I just know they all have candy names. Yeah. It's James Coburn's team, which I actually really like David Caruso's character. There's something really odd and unusual about
that's
that
Kit
decision.
Kat.
Yeah, Kit Kat is my... He's the only one I remember the candy name. What are the other ones? Milky Way or...
Butterfinger is the dude who played Leatherface.
Yeah, Andrew Bryanowski.
His character is actually the most entertaining. There's Snickers and there's Almond Joy, Butterfinger, and Kit Kat. And Butterfinger is the one who's got all the funny lines because he's a big idiot. He plays Moose from the Archies.
Basically, yeah.
And even though this guy's a henchman and a thug, he's just like kind of likable and dopey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was actually stuff that I did enjoy. I also really enjoyed the Pope watching Mr. Ed.
Hello. I'm Mr. Red.
I like the suction cup gun. Funk. Funk.
Yep.
It's bizarro. It doesn't really make any sense. I don't know how it's even possible. But it exists, and it's just one of those ideas where I bet you Joel Silver was like...
What do you got?
Yeah, like, we have these suction cup rocket launchers.
All right, that sounds good. How are we going to make it possible?
Oh, we got to set the timer on it, and you shoot it, it, like, blows up in the middle of the air. If it's set to 1 second, you shoot it... 6 seconds, it'll hit the thing and then blow up 2 seconds later.
Who cares?
Now, I like this movie a lot, but there are certain things that just get under my skin, and I don't understand exactly why they make the choice they make. Was there anything that bothered you about this movie?
I don't understand why Danny Aiello is in the movie as an actor. Like, why did they cast Danny Aiello?
he was hot at the time. That's the only thing I can think of. I think he had gotten an Oscar nomination, maybe off of Moonstruck? I can't remember. But I think he was just cast because he was a name. Maybe him and Bruce Willis got along really well.
Yeah, well, they seem to have actually got along really well. They're all jokey and whatever, and it's hard to act like friends if you're not a friend of somebody.
Yeah, the chemistry won't be there, then therefore, you know, you have a loss, a massive loss right there if the chemistry doesn't work.
So they do have a chemistry, but I just find it weird that this guy who's like 20 years older...
That is odd.
Is right? So it just seems odd. Like, you don't have that usually in real life situation. Of course, this is not real life. This is a bonkers, silly movie.
Yeah, I feel like there's something in the backstory they ditched. Like, maybe when Bruce Willis was young, that Danny Aiello was his mentor. Maybe he taught him how to rob?
Burgle.
Burgle? That's a weird word. Burgle.
But that's what it is. I love it. I love the word burgle. But I don't love the word gurgle, which is just strange, huh? Burgle and gurgle. So he mentions to Andy McDowell, who is a spy for the Vatican, that he's been in prison how long? And he says...
Let's just say I never saw E.T.
Yeah, so I'm guessing a decade.
Yeah, so right. 82 to 89 when he got out or whatever. When did this movie come out?
Summer of 91.
Summer of 91.
Memorial Day, 1991, I think.
So just under a decade he's been in prison. That's just like, wow, you missed a whole lot. You did miss all of the video game stuff. And E.T. Anyway.
MTV?
Yeah, MTV.
He doesn't know that everybody needs to Wang Chung tonight. He missed out on this.
Yeah, so he's stuck with all the crooning songs and all those blues rock songs that he likes.
Which I actually kind of like that album, Return of Bruno.
Oh, yeah? You do?
I listened to it a lot in college, actually. I haven't listened to it since. I don't know if I still like it.
He wrote the theme song for the movie with another guy, and then Dr. John sang it at the end of the movie.
I don't remember the song at all. Is it something silly like, gotta get hot?
Yeah, it says, it's one of those theme songs. I've been trying to compile, I did this back when MySpace was around. I asked the question, what movies have there ever been that have an end theme song that references the movie, like Dragnet?
Thank God it's Friday!
Monster Squad or any of these movies. And I didn't realize that there were even more. And we compiled this huge list. And there's so many more, like Hudson Hawk.
Waxworks 2?
Was there a song called Waxwork 2?
Oh, I don't think they say 2. I think it's called, it's called Waxworks 2 Lost in Time, I think. And it's all about being lost in time.
So because it's a Lost in Time?
I can't remember now. All I remember is the music video plays during the credits. And Zach Gallagher, someone comes next to everybody else, just kind of, I'm supposed to be dancing. Why do I have to keep doing this?
Yeah. So this movie has that type of theme. It has an instrumental version at the beginning, and the end is with Dr. John singing it.
Then I'm sure the Nintendo version had the game opening, you know, with the theme song, but all digital 8-bit. It probably sounded better, too.
Probably. Everything sounds better, chiptune. I don't necessarily agree with that. Okay, the major villains are Richard Grant and Sandra Bernhardt.
Oh, this is the part where we come to the irritating thing. I like them, but there's this thing that Sandra Bernhardt does when she talks, and I don't know if she does it on purpose. I've never seen her in anything else. Never seen her in anything
You've never
else.
Seen her stand up?
No, I've never seen it. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen her anything else besides Hudson Hawk, but she does this thing with
big boys don't cry my eye.
I mean, she talks like she's an alien. You know, mouth is, it's like that little mouth that's inside the mouth that bursts out. It's like that little mouth is talking.
Okay, so Sandra Bernhardt is a stand-up comic. She's a counterculture icon anyway. When they hired her because she was hot stuff at the time, and they didn't direct her.
No, not one bit, no. Michael Lehman was just like, she's a force of nature, I'm just gonna sit back and watch this happen.
That's how she does. That's her. That's how she talks and all that. Put her in an interview, and that's how she talks. Put her on okay. stage.
I
that's
thought how... she
was... So she presents herself. I'm sure it's possibly a persona that she can't outlive, you know? Like, sometimes a persona gets bigger than the person in their private life.
Yeah.
She just presents herself that way, and that's how she's always been. And my awareness of her career, that's how I've always... seen her is that. It is crazy. She's one of the craziest things about the movie. And Richard Grant and she played off of each other irritatingly but perfectly. Their obnoxiousness, they had chemistry, those two, you know?
Oh, definitely. Richard Grant is a hoot to watch. Sometimes Sandra Bernhardt's okay, but there's certain moments where I'm just like, just move on.
Yeah.
When they die, you're actually kind of satisfied. You're like, oh,
yep. The movie starts off though, and this is just jumping all around.
Well, it's kind of like this movie. It's all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. But it starts off with a really strange narration.
Long ago, the Duke of Milan commissioned a little-known artist to erect
a mammoth statue of a horse.
What do you know about this?
Well, I remember it opens with, it says open and end.
Like a storybook.
Yeah, with a storybook with a narration and everything is hand-drawn and like Leonardo da Vinci's old
but
book.
But like what, why that narrator who's just, who is that guy anyway? I forget.
I don't remember.
It was in that article you cited.
It's probably William Conrad, who knows. Go to our page, Video Night, the article's up there. It's on there. Yeah, you'll find the byline.
Well, it's just, it starts, obviously, I don't know where, but it starts with the narration and it ends with the same narration, but the end part of the narration is just like really, well, okay, that's it, we're done.
With a world saved and the secrets of Da Vinci protected, Eddie finally got his coffee.
And the book closes.
Yeah, it's...
It's really abrupt.
The movie stops and starts with what it wants. I mean, it jumps. When I was seeing the Looney Tunes action thing, it does. It jumps into cartoony stuff because, like, with him rolling down the highway on the bed, there's a part where my favorite bit.
I meant to mention that.
Yeah,
that's your favorite bit?
Yeah, I don't know why. I just giggle so hard for, like, that 5 minutes where it's him riding through the streets, and then after that he...
On a gurney.
On the gurney, and then he meets the candy villains. That part I always enjoy the most.
Yeah, that is the part, it's like a tug of war. Do I really like that part or don't I? And part of me actually really does like that part. Part of me doesn't like that part because it's just so stupid. That's kind of the movie in a nutshell. It's a spy caper, it's a heist caper, there's people double-crossing each other, and all the ingredients should work together and possibly do, but for me they don't seem to work as well as they could have. Or should this movie have even been made this way? You know,
I don't know. It feels like a little independent movie. Like these ideas would have been passed by like a studio desperate for a hit. You know, this is a major studio production. This is $65 million, which from what I read in the article, by the way, I found the article. It's called Money into Light, Daniel Waters on Hudson Hawk, and it was written by Paul Rowlands. So
there you go.
Proper byline there. It just feels like one of those movies that probably was started at like $40 million and things just kept getting added and out of control. And I don't know, the idea.
It is a vanity project, right?
Oh yeah, this is Bruce Willis at his peak. This is when he was super hot, and this is right before everything went to crap. He still had Last Boy Scout and Death Becomes Her, and then after that, things kind of crashed for a few years. Let's not talk about Color of Night or Striking Distance. So he could pretty much get away with anything, and I feel like they were just like, yeah, just okay, another $5 million. Let's just keep this going. Plus, Joel Silver, you know that guy talks people into things all the time.
Yeah.
I will find out a movie cost $50 million. You're like, why did a movie with Cindy Crawford, fair game, why did that cost $50 million? I went and saw that movie, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was about a $15 million movie. How the hell is this possible? And I just feel like Joel Silver's like,
all right, let's shoot this now, throw it away. Shoot it again, shoot it a different way, throw it away.
And I think they're running out of time. This seems like the kind of movie that should have been shot in 3 months was probably shot in 7. And there's little things that get by that no studio probably would have let. Is like the part where he's just kicking James Coburn over and over and over, up and down, up or
down. Oh, right. No, Coburn is actually punching him in the face over and over again. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, go, oh, oh, ah, ooh, oh, ee. And you're like, how did that get by?
Right. So there are choices.
Or dolphin talking.
Yes.
I must speak with the dolphins now.
You're hitting all my notes. The dolphin thing, yeah, she's doped up with some sort of tranquilizer, and it has an adverse effect, which is her just babbling crazy, and they're like...
What can you do? What could you do when you were a teenager that amused your friends? Dolphin voice? Okay, do that.
Yeah, it's just like, whatever popped in their head, they just threw on the screen. It's just, it's amazing. This will never happen again. This movie will never happen, because movies play it too safe now. Even the god-awful garbage ones, they play it safe, and that's why, you know, they're just dull. They just make poor decisions. These aren't exactly poor decisions. They're every decision. I'm saying no.
You just boiled down my problem with the film. They're every decision.
Yeah, but I still think it's a wild ride. There's nothing else really like this.
No, there's not. I say Young Einstein a little bit, but Young Einstein had a lot of really great decisions, even though it's like so lightweight now. It's not crazy weird. It is when you're a 13-year-old and you're not exposed to anything goofy other than cartoons, but live action stuff. But
it's so weird, though, that Daniel Waters, if you look at his film, he has all these really unique bonkers ideas in independent movies and major productions, but you don't really see that with his brother. Mark, he plays very, very safe. Most of his stuff is very mainstream.
Yeah, that's probably like me and my brothers. I'm the weird one.
Yeah, and me and my sister. My sister doesn't. Yeah, I'm the bonkers one too.
Well, thank you for, really, you got me to watch this movie even by posting that article, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. I'm gonna...
And this I recommend. You have to see, even if you don't like it, it's something you just like. Like, it burns burns in your brain, like, how did this even happen? You could find it easily. It's on, like, Crackle all the time, or you find it in those multi-feature sets from Mill Creek where you get, like, 10 movies for $5.
Oh, right.
You know,
right,
it's right. It's easy to find.
I know people who wouldn't enjoy this at all, and I am not going to kill myself having seen it, so take that as a...
Well, that's a positive review. I didn't kill myself.
That's a recommendation. That's a possible recommendation. I don't know. But, yeah. On that note, I'm signing off. Thank you, Michael, for joining me. You'll probably be back with another thing that I'll make you watch, and you'll be...
Yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, I gotta tell you this. Someone made me watch Itchy the Killer for another episode that we're doing for Video Night, and I said, all right, I'll watch that. And it was Riccio and Itchy the Killer, and Riccio was insane and gross and fun, but yeah. Itchy the Killer made me feel terrible. I feel very bad. I don't ever want to see it again.
Well, I don't want to make you feel bad on another episode in the sense of making you feel, like, physically, like, or emotionally distressed. Or anything. I just want you to suffer under a possibly a terrible movie or just
lots of head scratchers.
Yes, too much weirdness. Go ahead and suffer under that. That's fun sometimes. So
you should have called. That's what you should have called the show. Too much weirdness.
But then you know, Young Einstein isn't too weird. It's just weird enough.
It's weird. Pretty sure they put a cat in an oven in that movie. I haven't seen it forever, but
he rescues them anyway.
Okay. All right, we're running out of time, everybody. We gotta go.
Yep. Catch you later, everybody.
Michael, stop it!